It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
We are unmuted.
Hey, welcome back to the Out of Spec podcast and happy new year. Just about. We are recording this on New Year's Eve and it should go up live today. Not live, but you know, it'll go up today. Anyways, we're going to talk about the Ioniq 5 experience that Forrest has had. And we're just going to talk, basically wrap up the 2021, what were some of the best cars, some of the worst cars, and just going to talk cars and have a good time on this holiday.
And then next week, we'll talk about next year,
which
will be the current year.
So thanks for joining us. And let's jump right in. Previously, Forrest had mentioned on a previous episode that he was about to get an Ioniq 5 to effectively take all the way to Dallas. So Forrest, tell us about that experience.
So I drove it about 1,400 miles and stopped about nine or 10 times to charge.
This was a Ioniq 5 limited big wheel, all wheel drive, right?
Correct. With, you know, that's the biggest battery pack they offer, which is about 77 point something.
Yep.
And it was me, my wife, my dog, full luggage. So, you know, and then the temperature fluctuated, but it went anywhere from 74 degrees when we left. Got as low as 28.
28 low. Yeah, I mean, that's cold.
It's pretty cold, yeah. It didn't snow or rain or anything. It was pretty dry all the entire way, but it just got cold. So the first trip when I left, I got the most charge. And I think that was 194 miles with like 10 or 11 remaining. So that would have been like what, 200 and?
Yeah, so I guess when you left, the winds were probably behind you. So you probably had a wind advantage, but you were starting at sea level. So do you know if you gained elevation throughout that drive?
We did. The first drive, I had to go up, like going from San Diego to like Yuma. Mm-hmm. You have to basically climb this huge mountain, and then you're up there for a bit, and then you go back down the other side into just flat land, and then you go into Yuma, and then right after Yuma, you're in Arizona.
And so, you know, you also went down, it can charge, but I guess here, before we even talk about the range numbers and how your trip went, we should mention, so Ioniq 5 is like 305 mile rear wheel drive.
Mm-hmm.
Range, and yep. It's 256 all wheel drive, like a massive difference in this all-wheel drive. And to me, it doesn't really make sense because the front motor disconnects when driving. And you would think, okay, well, maybe EPA doesn't test the cars in eco mode. They don't. They test them in key up setting. One of the reasons Taycans have never done well in EPA tests. However, even in normal mode under light throttle, the front motor is disconnected. So there's almost no reason that I think of that there's that much of a difference. For example, ID4, similar system, it uses a you know, basically a SRI motor up front, an induction motor, so it can physically shut off without needing to disconnect, only loses 10 miles of range going to all-wheel drive. This loses 40, 50 miles, and it's just hauling around that extra weight. Did you happen to ask Hyundai about this? Do you know why that's the case?
So I didn't have to ask Hyundai, but once they saw the video of how I was disappointed in the worst trip that I got, so the worst full charge that I experienced was about 180 miles, and then with 10 miles remaining, so about 100, I think it was like 183 to be exact. So it would have done 193 according to the car before I just fully died. And I was like, man, that's super unacceptable considering, you know, 256 EPA. And also, to be fair, I'm keeping in mind the Kona Electric, which was phenomenal. I did over EPA in that multiple times. Easily. It was just such a good car.
Yeah, same and here. I would consistently see 290, 300 on a full charge on the gasometer.
And I was like, there's zero way Hyundai can get the Kona Electric, which is essentially a gas platform. They were like, hey, let's make an electric version, afterthought kind of thing. I'm sure they thought about it in some form or fashion, but you know what I mean. Then they go like 4 or 5 years later, full electric platform, ground up, completely optimized for an electric setup, and you're only putting out 256 miles. And even worse than that, I'm seeing way less in real world. Now, granted, we had people and stuff and a dog and it was cold, but still, I expected it to at least do like 230 in those conditions, to be honest. That's kind of what I was expecting.
Would be exactly where I would think the car would come in, because you also, we haven't mentioned, but you and I spoke about this, you were just driving at 70. You weren't going fast.
No, I had it on 70 miles per hour, cruise control. So like technically the computer was working out the most efficient way to drive. It was in eco mode the entire trip, and I only had the fan speed to 1. And when it got cold, I didn't even turn the heat up. I turned on the heated seats because that didn't seem to hit my range. When I would push the fan up and down, you would physically see the range drop like anywhere from like 3 to 10 miles, depending on how high you're blasting the air. So I kept it at 1. I mean, everything was pretty much optimized. Hyundai did reach out to me after I posted the video, and they were like, hey, so we had some questions about your video, and you know, most cars do lose range in the cold and all this stuff. And I think they're telling me all the reasons why the IONIQ 5 is better than I think it is. And none of it made sense as to why I was getting the range I was getting. I was like, I understand that you're quite efficient for a 77 kilowatt hour pack, apparently. I understand that the IONIQ 5 isn't as aerodynamic. I understand that you maximized interior like cargo volume and like all this other stuff. I'm just like, and I understand the car charges fast, right? I get it. But my thing was, why in the world would you not maximize range over interior space? Or why would you let your car be like, according to them, is like decently less aerodynamic than like a Mach-E or a Model Y? And then on top of that, I was like, the fast charging did me no good personally, because to make it to the next station, I had to charge to 100%. Now, granted, I got to 100% faster than probably like a Mach-E or Model Y, depending on what charger you stop at. But I still had to charge to 100%. So I didn't really get to take advantage of the 18-minute 0 to 80% thing, because most of there's one charger that was like 190 miles away. And I had to just really focus on, when I was seeing any sort of downhill, I would hit the brake, turn off cruise control, and pull the regen paddle all the way to zero and coast as far as I could, and then turn cruise control back on. Like, I was really after it, dude.
So I guess this brings up some concerns, because I think as a car, you and I can both agree that it's amazing and it's fun and it drives great and there's plenty of room, and I think it looks amazing. But in practicality, the range is a concern. And this is the same thing we've heard from our European car reviewing colleagues that have mentioned thermal issues and range issues on the car. Now, to be fair, and not defending Hyundai in any way, you had the least efficient configuration on
stage.
Big wheel, all-wheel drive. I think I really want to test a rear-wheel drive on the aero wheels and put it up against a rear-wheel drive base ID4. run them on the same stretch of road. Doesn't need to be at 70, just both cars back to back.
Yeah.
See if it truly does go farther. I'd also like to add an all-wheel drive Ioniq 5 just to see, is it actually that big of a range difference in real world?
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, I think the rear motor is the same on both cars. Although Hyundai was saying that they optimized the inverters for this, that, the other thing, it doesn't mean 50 miles of range difference. Look, a Lucid Air makes 1,100 horsepower and still is very efficient. So the power to efficiency doesn't work like a combustion car where you're hauling around extra cylinders for more power and it, you get less efficiency. You can still get good efficiency with good power.
Yeah.
It's a big concern about Ioniq 5. It really is. But overall, aside from the range, which we're going to dig into next year, perhaps you can help us too if we do some range
testing.
What was your impression of the car and the charging experience?
So I like the car. I think most of my frustrations with it come from a place of disappointment. I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed, Hyundai. It's like your parents say. Like, I totally get that saying now because you have this high expectation. You have this, like, I've seen what you can do. I know you're capable of making what honestly I thought was going to be one of the best electric cars on sale. Like, no reason to buy a Model Y, just get an Ioniq 5. That was kind of what I was expecting to say basically in the review. And I think when that didn't happen, I was super frustrated. I was like, dude, Hyundai could have had like the best EV, and it still has lots of advantages. Like, you know, you get the federal tax credit. It comes with 2 years of free charging through Electrify America, and it's like 30-minute sessions. So like you could charge 30 minutes, unplug, plug in, free session again, 30 minutes, unlimited is what I read. So that's pretty good. And like, those are great advantages. The charging was pretty fast. So during the Christmas weekend, at least in Texas, Fort Worth, Texas, where I was, it was 84 degrees. Like, it was hot. So in those temps, it was charging like, I think the fastest I saw from 10% to 80% was like 14 minutes is what the car said. And I was like, oh shoot, that's like a little bit faster than like what they said. It was fast. And even like past 80%, I think it was still charging at like 40 kilowatts, 45 kilowatts, I believe I saw at like 87%. So it was still juicing up pretty fast. Pretty much all the way through. And I think the highest I personally saw was 232 kilowatts. It may have hit more in some areas, but as in terms of like when I was paying attention to like how many kilowatts it was pushing, that was the highest I saw.
That's pretty impressive. I mean, 230 kilowatts is great. Look, Model 3, Model Y will peak at 250, but they don't hold it nearly as long as the 235 kilowatt, I think, advertised peak of Ioniq 5. So, you know, I think on major metropolitan travel areas, the New York to Miami, the LA to San Francisco, the not to the middle of Texas routes, the efficiency doesn't matter as much because A, free charging, and B, the stations are 60 to 70 miles apart. So you go, you know, you pull in low, you charge it to 50%, you drive it at 85, 90 miles an hour to the next charger.
Yeah.
And you do it that way. And the charging speed offsets efficiency. But it does bring up a good point that we can't ignore range because there's still massive parts of this country without, you know, serious infrastructure. For me, an example is I can't actually go to Salt Lake City from my house in an electric car other than a Tesla.
Yeah.
Without having to go all the way down to Denver, across the mountains and back up because I-80, there's no chargers. So this is still a big, big situation. And but interesting to hear your thoughts on Ioniq 5. I mean, at the end of the day, I think you're the first one to ever road trip one in the U.S.
I believe so. I've seen many road trips. Like, I watched a lot of videos on from everyone from like the U.K. or over, across seas. And
yep,
I think they were getting like roughly the same. Like, there was one video where this dude drove in like 55 degrees. So it was kind of rainy and he got like 180 out of it. So I'm like, man, I was like, that's crazy to me. I don't know. And it's funny because the wheels are big, but it's not like they're super un-aerodynamic wheels. Because like when you look at them, it's pretty flat. It's got like the black stuff in the middle with that crazy design, but there's not really many like holes in the wheel. It's pretty aerodynamic-ish, but I think the size is more what's causing the issue, right?
And tired width as well. I don't remember exactly what they're on, but like Mach-E's on like 215s or 225s, little bicycle tires.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, shaped aero. The big question is it aero or is it mechanical inefficiencies? And that's what I think we need to figure out, because
yeah,
it sounds like too much of a hit to even be aero. The big question is going to be EV6. When we line these two up next to each other, is the EV6 going to go significantly farther? Because if that's the case, then it's aero.
Yeah, is. Can you still see me or no?
Yep.
You can. Okay. I'm looking up. What is the weight of Mach-E? I'm looking that up.
Oh,
so Mach-E weight. Okay. It says Mach-E 4394 to 49. So max is out at like 5 grand-ish.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now I'm going to look up Ioniq 4 weight. Ioniq or Ioniq 5 weight.
Yeah. It's pretty similar.
So the Ioniq 5 is less heavier.
Yeah,
it's 42 to 46.
46, yeah. So it's one person difference, though.
Yeah. So it's not huge.
Not
and huge. Then Model Y weight is what? It says 4555. It doesn't have.
It's like hard to go off Model Y because they run those cars in a different EPA test, though.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so Tesla runs 5-cycle. Everyone else runs 2-cycle.
Yeah, it has to be the motors then, man. That's the only thing left that I can think of, like whatever motors they're using.
Yeah, there's got to be something more going on here. But no, interesting. I'm looking forward to road tripping one and seeing if we find similar things that you did. I'm really concerned about the charging temperature controls on multiple rapid chargers. You had a chance where you had 100-plus miles between chargers to let the thing cool down. On some of the routes I plan to take the car on, it's going to be a lot of that 0 to 50% hard driving. Plug it back in. I don't know if it's going to be able to handle that kind of quickness, because I actually overheated the Kia EV6 on the Autobahn driving like that. I overheated every EV, but you know that happened fairly quickly in that car.
Yeah. It's also interesting though, because I ran that car for 26 hours straight without turning it off. So
yeah,
it held up pretty good in that regard, but I mean,
yeah,
I
but
think
you're
that,
doing big distances between chargers, so there's plenty of time for it to cool itself.
That's true. I think the worst one I saw was, and of course it could have been due to the station, but I think they were also saying really cold temps affect your charging speeds, like you won't get as advertised.
Yeah, because it doesn't precondition for chargers right now.
Gotcha. So the worst I saw was it took us almost 2 hours at one station because it was 45 minutes to get to 80%, and we were at like 8% or 6%. And then from there, it was like another 50 minutes to get back up to 100%, which once again, we needed to get to make it to the next station.
Wild. That sounds like a totally different experience than what we were hoping for.
I know. I can't get over it. Yeah, that was because my wife and we don't have a car right now. So we've been looking for cars to get. And I was pushing hard for that car. I was like, this is going to be one of the ones that's going to be like at the top of our list. And honestly, I thought me having it for that long was just going to be more confirmation that this is the car I was going to get.
Hmm.
So,
and not the case now. So what? Where's your head at?
Yeah.
What you're thinking?
Oh, like what I want to get?
Yeah.
That's tough, man. I want it to be electric. And I think, I don't know. If I had to, only because of our situation, right? So we drive a lot. We do drive to Texas once a year, so we have to make that trip once a year. And just based off of all the EVs I've been in, if I had to choose one that made the most sense, I honestly probably have to go Tesla. I wouldn't like be mega happy about it though.
Why is that?
Just because, like, especially out here in SoCal, dude, there's so many and like you can't differentiate yourself from like anyone. So I think like having the EVs from like the other automakers is kind of cool in the fact that like it's different, but like other automakers aside, I mean, unless you're going to spend over like 100 grand for like a Lucid or something. Or even like maybe a Rivian, but I haven't driven it long enough to see if it's even that good in real world, you know?
Well, it's going to be very inefficient. We can guess that.
Oh, for sure. Especially if you get like the bigger tire option, you know,
which you need to get the 20-inch all terrains. I'm sorry.
Yes. And
you
so
you don't like the sport wheels, Mike?
Oh, I do. But I figure if I'm going to buy a Rivian, I'm going to plan to off-road it a little bit. So I'm just going to want the all terrains. But same. I do think the 22s look really good.
I do. I do. If you're not going to take it off road and you just, you know, want something looks cool, they look great.
Land on 22s, baby.
But yeah, I mean, honestly, that trip really like made me realize how, like, as much as people hate on Tesla, like, they really do have their charging infrastructure down. It is nice that you can just pretty much navigate. I mean, you own one, so you can tell me if I'm right about most of this stuff, but you can like navigate in the car's navigation. It pretty much tells you like where to go, what route to take, how much to charge to, and all that stuff, right?
Yep.
So that's mega convenient.
Well, so that we're starting to see more of that. Some notable examples are the Mercedes system. MBUX does a really good job of charging state routing. It'll even tell you how many people are at the Electrify America station and tell you what's online. And so that's good.
Yeah.
Polestar 2 and XC40 Recharge, pretty good as well. Both of those systems can't do huge distances, though. The Tesla can route you across the country without even thinking about it.
Yeah, and I think that's the other thing is, like, you know, with the Mercedes, once again, at that $100,000 mark, the Polestar is good, but I think the Polestar would probably see the same, maybe worse range than Ioniq 5.
Probably
I don't know.
Worse range.
Yeah, so
it's very inefficient.
That wouldn't be an option for me at all because of that. I don't know, man. It's just hard because there are a lot of good EVs out there, but they're not perfect. And I don't think we'll get a perfect EV, but I think the closest to perfect right now would honestly would have to be a Tesla, other than the fact that, like, I wish there was more character to a lot of the cars.
I think the move is Model S long range non plaid, my opinion.
Yeah, because that's like what, 370 something?
It's stupid fast. It goes really far in a charge, over 400 miles.
Yeah, it's over 400 rated.
EPA, which is going to be like 300 real world.
Yeah.
And like that, whatever. You just drive. And the charging curve's not amazing, but on a trip, you charge it to 50%. And there's superchargers everywhere. It's a hatchback. It still is the best looking EV on sale, I think.
Yeah, I agree, dude. I think the Model S long range non-plaid is such a good car. I saw lots of videos lately on the Lucid, which looks really cool. I'm just curious about the car in every regard, just because they're so new.
Yeah, I haven't spent any time with it yet. I mean, I drove it for 16 minutes and that's my experience. And as you and I both know, it's great to drive a car once and get initial impressions, but like you found with Ioniq 5, when you spend time with it, things pop up. And no journalists have been loaned the Lucid for an extended period of time, other than outlets, I think, that have done paid media deals with Lucid in the past. So I don't think there's ever been a true independent test of Lucid there for a long
time. I'd be very curious to see that. And then like, it goes without saying, like, you know, they're going to have to work their way through whatever kinks are going to come across in a Lucid. Every manufacturer has them. Especially when you're starting out.
But it all comes down to how they fix those things.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and how quickly they can address it with the software update, if it can be a software update.
Yeah, like, for example, my Tesla broke right as it hit 100,000 miles. And so it has, like, a drive unit failure. The motors are still under warranty. And that's what it shows. It shows, like, parking brake failure, it kills autopilot, and the motor starts doing some wonky stuff. I scheduled a service appointment in the app. They said, hey, we're sending a new firmware to your car. Download it, install it, boom, and see if it happens. Well, it hasn't up until today. I just got a text because Alyssa was heading out. And so it just came back. But at least they attempted to fix it through software and were trying to save me a visit from going into the service center, because I hate bringing cars in for service. I don't know anyone who enjoys that. And I mean, dealing with Tesla service sucks, but that was a great experience. My first one.
Nice. Yeah, it's interesting.
I guess to kind of wrap that up, it seems like Ioniq 5 is a great city car, but we were all expecting it to also be good on road trips, and that's kind of not the initial impression, but we'll do more testing. But in the city, I would love to have that car. I would also have a second car to do road trips with, basically.
You wouldn't like the challenge?
Some people would. You would.
Yeah. See, the range doesn't scare me about the car. I'm not, like, that doesn't even take anything away from me.
No. It's not an issue. It's more inconvenience than anything, because once we got to Dallas, right? So we were still, or once we got to Fort Worth, we had to see so many family and friends, and everyone had us go to Dallas, which is like 45 minutes away from Fort Worth, where we were staying in downtown Fort Worth. And so it would be like 50 miles by the time we drove out there. We would drive to go somewhere to eat, drive to see another friend, and then drive back. So that was like 110, 115 miles. And then we'd have to do the same thing again the next day. And I'm like, okay, I can't do that again with 75 miles remaining. So I have to charge back up again. And we pretty much had to charge every single day. That was just the inconvenience. Yeah. That's true. But I was also thinking about that. Like, there are a lot of people who like do very well for themselves and buy electric cars that live in like condos, lofts, apartments. I'm just like, dang, it just sucks. Cause like you're pretty much excluding most of those people who have to rely on what the car can do just on that one charge, you know?
Yes. It really is one of the largest problems to EVs is charging in general. The cars are great. I think the cars are fun and cool. The range issue becomes less of a problem with the more charging opportunities that you have. And I think we need a huge focus on level 2 overnight charging for urban areas, as well as DC fast chargers in rural areas. And so, basically the use cases that you would think would be the opposite, but need to happen.
Yeah. Especially considering EVs were made more for like urban dwellers.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, look, we live pretty much... We're the last town before Wyoming here in our Tesla, and we've never had an issue. And we've taken it up to Montana. We've gone everywhere with that car. Yeah. And so it's possible. Anyway, we can move on from that. But that's interesting. I am very much looking forward to spending more time with Ioniq 5 this coming year. But yeah, it doesn't seem like a great – it seems like a road tripper with trade-offs, and the trade-off is range.
Yeah, it was comfortable, though. And it got more looks than I think most vehicles I've been in.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm not surprised. It looks like the TV is rolling down the road.
Oh, dude. People were like, that's a Hyundai? And it's just like, and I was, it broke my heart when they were like, how is it? Because you can tell like the excitement in their eyes was like so genuine. And I'm just like, I was like, just don't take it on long trips. But other than that, it was fantastic. Like, I really did enjoy driving it. Like, getting into the Santa Fe I'm in now, you don't realize how much of a luxury range is when you get into something like that Santa Fe hybrid and you see 584 miles left on your tank.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah. Hold on. I got to plug my laptop in. It's about to die.
Sure. Jordan, you can bring us to the next one.
Yeah. So we're going to switch to basically talk about what our best cars and maybe worst cars were of the year, kind of a year like look back. So I guess Kyle, you want to start. We've had a lot of cars this year, like, a ton.
Yes.
And so it's hard to even think of all of them. Like, we don't have like a single spreadsheet of like, this is every single car.
Next year
we'll do that.
That last year we're starting. Now we're starting it this year, next year.
It can be genuinely the best car and the worst car, or even like, what was a surprise? Like, what did you get into thinking this is going to be awesome? And then after driving, you're like, wow, never driving that again.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think we can start off easily with the worst car being the MX-30. And not everything about it was bad, but it just had like – it's like a non-starter in terms of range and charging when factoring price and then use case. And it wasn't that quirky enough to justify being bad. Like, it didn't have a sense of personality, in my opinion. And it was front-wheel drive. And I'm just like, this is all not working. Meanwhile, my smart car, which actually costs about the same, has – less than half the range of the MX-30, is actually way better because it's worse, if that makes sense.
So funny, dude.
As a personality. And you also went to Europe. And
yes.
Like, so something like the Honda E and the MX-30.
Yeah.
They're kind of comparable, but the E has so much personality.
The Honda E is where it's at because, personality. It's so fun. And it's rear-wheel drive, which means I was driving around Munich and then like, oh, green light, and it makes so much torque at zero and you can drift it around, and it had fish tank going on the screen and you could feed the fish in the fish tank. It was the coolest thing ever. And had great turning radius. It charged terribly. It had no range. It was horribly inefficient, but it drove really well. And I loved everything about that car. Perfect daily driver, expensive. Very, I think it's like 50 grand US equivalent.
Wow.
But very expensive. And just really awesome. So loved that car. Some notable cars that stuck out to me this year. New Supra, surprisingly rowdy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, surprisingly rowdy, but no manual. Nope. So that's kind of a bummer. Really enjoyed that car, actually. The Taycans, spent a lot of time in Taycans this year. Very impressive car. Actually, exactly 1 year ago today, we were ripping across the country, setting the electric cannonball record.
Oh yeah,
which was pretty cool. And now that's been broken, of course, by a Model S. And so
Model S long range, non-plaid.
Model S long range. but, you know, really interesting to see how far Electrify America's come from them. I think they're seriously much more reliable. Not to say they're perfect. There's some issues. Like, my dad had some issues at a station this week. But I think I feel very comfortable rolling up to a station knowing I can charge these days. Although they're mad at me. They just said, you know, my tweets were too mean to them and they're mad. I don't know. But I feel like I try and give them accurate coverage. I don't know. So everything with Taycan was great. The Euro Tour was amazing with the Cross Turismo going around the Nürburgring. Really fun. Yeah, just an amazing year of cars. What was a surprise, I guess? That's a good question.
I honestly thought so we had the Nissan Frontier and the Pathfinder.
Frontier, really good.
Nissan has been a brand that we've struggled to be super happy about in the recent years, partially because they've gone, feels like decades without really updating them. And now they finally are updating everything.
Yeah, just like at once. They said, yeah, we're doing it all.
They're like, okay, we heard you. Everything's fixed. And genuinely, the Frontier and Pathfinder were both really impressive. That was kind of a surprise for me, I think. And then on the other side of that is Infiniti still being not great.
Yeah, dude.
That, they just kind of left Infiniti on the side of the road. Good luck.
I don't know what they're doing with Infiniti. In my opinion, Infiniti should be, okay, screw everything. We're going all electric. Aria is going to be our you know, centerpiece car. Infiniti will spearhead Nissan's electric movement, but it's not happening. And even Aria is delayed. So I don't know what they're doing with EVs, but their combustion cars are getting really good. However, I don't think they're as good as Hyundai Kia stuff. No. as a whole in each class. Hyundai Kia stuff, I think, is really good. Like, the new Elantra was surprisingly awesome. I think that might be a big surprise of the year. New Elantra, Sorento was good. Mike, you had that car too.
Yeah, the Sorento hybrid would be my biggest surprise of the year, and how much I actually like that car. I liked everything about it. It was comfortable.
And the USB great ports in the seats.
Yep. I mean, it's a great family car. If you need a 3-row SUV that gets amazing efficiency, I mean, that's the one to get. And it was pretty inexpensive. I think the maxed out one was only $37,000.
I think new S-Class would be a highlight for me.
Oh,
not
yeah,
the EQS, but the full-on S580.
Yeah. S-Class was fantastic. It was cool too. I liked all the... I mean, naturally, we do a lot of comparisons, whether we or not we film it or document it, but in our heads, we're comparing things. And so having the two Supras at once, the four-cylinder, the six-cylinder, yep, seeing how I liked the four-cylinder a lot more than I expected, I would still be more happy with the six, but the four was like a great contender, especially at the price point.
And that's a great four-cylinder.
Yeah, it's fantastic. You just need a tune, a chip tune, and you're all good.
Yeah, but I overheated it, so I don't know the thermal capacity.
It's not a track weapon.
Right. It's an autocross weapon.
Yeah, yeah. But on track, we had them both on track, and six-cylinder was way better.
Six-cylinder was just sideways the entire time.
And then, along those lines, it's like the, you know, experiencing the S-Class and being like, okay, this is peak car in so many ways. And then when I was with Forrest, we had the Rolls-Royce Ghost, and it was like amazing in so many ways, but I would still prefer the S-Class for less than a third of the cost.
I agree. The S-Class is the package. I mean, look, it's been the car for the last 60 years or whatever. It's been for a reason. They built the best possible thing that they can just stamp out. And it's still interesting. And something about driving one and just seeing that three-pointed star physically standing up off the hood makes you feel a little bit better than everyone else.
Yes. A little bit better is accurate, because it's like, it looks so much like every other Mercedes. You're just like, oh, that one's longer. It must be the S-Class.
Yeah, it's just a little bit. But it's not like, oh, it's a Rolls, right? Yeah. Like, where you're like, let me just impale you with my spirit of ecstasy.
Yeah. Right.
Which is like, you know, it's classy. Loved the engine. Loved the mild hybrid system. That was my biggest surprise of the year. I thought I would like EQS more than S580. When I drove the EQS, I think I said that. And then I got into the new S-Class. I was like, oh, that's the car.
Yeah. EQS is great. And I think a lot of people overlook it because they look at it.
just walk up to it like this.
Yeah, get inside without looking at the outside, and you'll be like, wow, this is a great car.
Did you see Doug reviewed the same car we had?
Yeah.
Why are they giving the worst spec to everyone?
I don't know. And he thought it looked okay. So yeah. Doug's broken.
Doug's broken.
Anyway, so what isn't really a surprise, I think, was, Taycan, like you said, especially GTS, and then also the Rivian, which I was nervous about both those cars because they were so hyped up in my mind. I was scared to like experience them, but just finding out that they are genuinely great. Now, we haven't done Rivian on all of our tests. Like, we haven't done our independent testing necessarily.
That'll be next year.
We just did their kind of route on the first mile event and still loved it. Like, had a great time, but I'm looking forward to spending more time in that truck. And especially seeing the R1S.
There were some, one thing I think was missing from the Rivian experience was it was comfortable, but it didn't, like when you get into a Range Rover or you get in even to this Grand Wagoneer that we're driving this week and you hit a bump, you feel like you're driving something that weighs like a little bit less than Pluto, but not by much. And the Rivian didn't give me this sense of extreme weight and waftiness and solidity. It didn't feel like it was carved from one, if you will. There was a couple little rattles, and I know it was a pre-production truck that was being thrashed off-road, and they were replacing them with new trucks, right? Because those were like hand-built, pro whatever they were.
They were on the last legs, and one broke while we were on the event.
Yeah, like, so and we can't judge them based off of that, because that's just like, these are not representative of a production vehicle someone would buy. But that's my biggest concern going with the Rivian is it going to have that Range Rover waft?
Which I'm excited to see, because I think that could be improved. And maybe the trucks we drove were, we know they were kind of older. They were, you know, proof of concepts.
Yeah.
And we were kind of off-road, and we never really got that much street time with it.
No, only like a half a mile on pavement.
Yeah. So I'm excited to like put it through daily driving and road trips and see how it does, because I think it's really a contender on paper, and even from our limited experience, it's a contender. So I'm just super excited about that company, and I'm keeping an eye on them. We have to stay pretty neutral, and like, I want every company to succeed, because I want, like Forrest said, Tesla is the default right now. Like, it just works, and I want all the other companies to get to that point so that people can choose cars based on character rather than can it charge.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, we're not even evaluating cars when people are buying EVs. We're evaluating ownership experiences, and that's something that we've never had to do in the combustion car space. For example, M5s notoriously and traditionally have always had the tiniest fuel tank, like 10-gallon fuel tanks in a V10 M5 that gets 6 miles to the gallon. But no one ever mentioned that into their review, because you just stop at the fueling station, whatever.
Yeah.
In an electric car, that is a drastic difference to your ownership experience, is how quick can it charge? What network are you charging on? And what is your range? And so EVs have been this, like, I can't wait till we can start reviewing the cars and not so much all the other stuff that comes with it.
Yeah. I mean, MX-30. Yeah. Prime example, you shredded up Angel's Crest, couldn't make it that far.
No, I had to go halfway because I was going to run out.
And then you got back to the bottom and charged at 35 kilowatts.
I knew it was going to be bad, so I put in some buffer time, but I didn't know it was going to be so bad. And I literally ran into the airport and I said, Mazda, I can't bring the car back to you. Like, I'm just going to leave it at the airport. I'm putting the keys on the tire. And they had someone over there because they did not like that idea. But I'm like, no one's going to want to steal this thing. Trust me. And so
not going very far.
But no one's going to take it. And if they do, it's going to have 3 miles of range. Yeah. And anyway, we got it all sorted and I got it back to them with plenty of buffer for them to get to a charger. But yeah, just that was bad.
Yeah.
And that shouldn't be the review, right? And that wasn't the review of the car. I didn't make that the case. What I made the case was I wish the product had more passion from the engineering side, and not so much the I can deal with a bad EV. I drive a smart car. but I love the passion in that car.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think GTS Sport Turismo changed my mind on Taycan, because I wasn't exactly sold.
Because you drove the worst one.
I drove a base 4 Cross Turismo, which I still enjoyed. And it was amazing how many looks you get in that car.
Even on the Russian spec aero wheels.
Yeah, yeah, really rough. But I still liked it. But then experiencing Sport Turismo, I was like, oh, I love this way more than Plaid.
So, Forrest, you also drove the GTS Sport Turismo. Mike and I have not yet driven it.
Nope.
Mike owns a Taycan, though. They have a rear-wheel drive. What do you
Small think? Battery.
Yeah, that's the enthusiast spec. Lightweight. Forrest, what do you think of the Sport Turismo version?
Oh, dude, I loved it. I actually reached out to, you know, it's funny, based off of what I was sort of experiencing, because I had the Ioniq 5 for about a week before we took it on the trip. And based off of what I was experiencing that week, I had a feeling it wasn't going to go too well. So I reached out to Calvin at Porsche. And I was like, hey, do you have any Taycans lying around that I can just road trip out to Texas? And he's like, dude, if you would have asked me like a few days ago, I would have had something for you. He's like, dang it. But yeah, dude, Sport Turismo is incredible, dude. It's so fun.
Donuts in it? Hell yeah.
Oh yeah, dude.
That's awesome.
It was a lot of fun. Yeah.
Wow, you were ripping it. Oh, dude. It's in fast motion. Okay.
Oh yeah, I had to speed it up. But awesome.
I love that first comment. Whip that thing.
Dude. Yeah, it was great. It handled really well. I mean, all this, the steering and the feedback, it's the best currently in any EV, hands down. Totally. It just has that. I mean, you know how Porsche, especially when you have the Alcantara wheel, you feel those little tiny like vibrations in like your fingertips.
Yep.
It's just like, dude. Wheel. Yeah, man. Like, I don't like the feel of the wheel, and I wouldn't ever buy one because I think it would wear really horribly.
That's what I have.
But when you do use them, like, they are nice to use. I just wouldn't own it.
I was going back and forth on this because I'm speccing my Taycan for this year, which hopefully I'll take delivery of before the end of the year, but depends on production shortages. Because I also wanted to go over and watch it be built and do all this thing if as long as COVID situation goes well.
Yeah.
I'm going to do paint a sample. I want to talk about the process. I'm going to go full Porsche and talk about my deviated color stitching at every Cars and Coffee. but the Racetex wheel is interesting. I hated the idea until I lived with it for almost a month or 3 weeks in Europe and noticed nowhere. And then when I brought it back, the Porsche guy showed me that you just literally wipe it with a cloth and it comes back brand new. And they have like cars that have been ragged on for like 8 years with this and they're still brand new. And I was so impressed because it's not Alcantara. It's like their own fabric that just doesn't care.
I want one in the Miata.
That's impressive because if that's the case, then I would all the way opt for that wheel.
Yep, no, yes. And it's standard. Feels good. Yes.
Yeah. And it's, dude, and if you're going to track that thing, like wearing gloves and having that level of grip with that wheel is like amazing.
Yeah. I'm a big fan overall of Sport Turismo in my mind, but I have yet to drive it. So at least it's going to be a long time unless I go over to Germany to drive one sooner. Cause all those cars are now back in Europe. And so we won't get US spec cars for another 6 months probably.
Yeah. Oh dude, you'll love it hands down. I mean, after I did those donuts and then took it back up the rest of Angeles Crest where it wasn't snowy and icy. Oh, dude, it felt even better than going up before because the tires were all heated up, like the grip levels were higher. And, dude, and my wife was in the passenger seat and she does not like when I drive fast. She just doesn't like it, right? Mm-hmm. And she looks at me while I'm like freaking bombing through Angeles Crest, right? And she's like, why do I feel like oddly secure right now? And you're going really fast. And I was like, right? Which gave me like, which told me like I can drive fast, like even faster.
the 18-way seats, they hold you great. That's what was.
I'm like... too fat for those. Mike, you have them in your car.
Yeah, we love the 18-way seats. Yeah, I think I personally could live without them, but Ben has very specific preferences apparently. Yeah,
because he doesn't like the seam in the 14.
Yeah, the 14-way seats felt fine to me.
Yeah, I agree.
Sounds like someone who works at Porsche.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
I think that the Taycan, so after like driving Taycan and Model S, it was like Taycan just felt, even though they're like comparable in size, the Taycan is so sculpted, which means the interior is a little bit smaller, which made you feel more secure in a weird way. And even the Sport Turismo, I have to look back and remind myself, oh, I'm really technically in a wagon because it felt more like Cayman, just in the sense of your seating position. You're like sitting in the car. You're not like above the car. Mm-hmm. And I was definitely sold. There's a lot of reasons people might choose Model S, but I would sacrifice probably the charging convenience for the driving feel of a Taycan, even a base Taycan. I realized with that Cross Turismo we had, it's like, yeah, this isn't the fastest 0 to 60. Kyle's Model 3 is faster, but it felt so good on even sort of spirited driving.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I think the person who goes for the Sport Turismo is, I mean, the person who appreciates the finer details of automobiling.
Yeah.
Motoring, or not motoring, but electric, I don't know, whatever you want to call
electric
it.
Electric motoring. Yeah.
Electric motoring. Yeah. Yeah. And the person that buys a Plaid is just like the Hellcat buyer that's gone electric.
Yeah.
Yeah. But why can't you have both? That's my thing. I love the Plaid. And especially now with track mode coming, it might solve all my biggest problems with the car. And it might be like the ultimate car if they can let it, you know, back some of the stuff off. I'd still go for Taycan because I just, like you mentioned, for seating position, steering feel, shape, the Porsche brand. To me, it's a car I assimilate with and, you know, that I feel confident in. It's something that appeals to me. But so does Model S. You know, like when I used to own a Model S and it was awesome. It was a P100D. It was black with white seats. I had the arachnids on it. It was sick. Mike, remember how many times we launched that car?
Oh, like, yeah, million. A lot.
And
the funnest thing.
Yeah, and it was the best. And like, why can't you like both? That's what I don't understand.
No, yeah, I love both. I just think it's weird how it's two different buyers, and you have people like us that are just like, oh, well, I would just buy both, or I would just have a car that can do both.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't know. I think it's pretty interesting because even if they made I wonder if they're gonna do like a GT. You know, remember how they did the Turbo GT with the Cayenne?
Yep.
I wonder if they'll do a Turbo GT on the Taycan.
I think
could be.
I think it's possible that we will see like a full track spec version of the Taycan.
Dude, that'd be amazing.
I don't think you could call it a GT car because I don't think it would fit with the
RS Club Sport.
yeah, it wouldn't be called that. We had to remove, we left one battery cell in there and it goes about a mile. Lightweight.
Yeah.
But I think there's room for like a sedan. So here's the thing. At this point, why wouldn't you buy a Cross Turismo? So then where's a Sport Turismo wagon version? So where does the sedan fit in? Well, that's got to be like the sportier one. And so I think they need to have a track pack or some sort of lighter weight, really aggressive tire on that car, carbon roof, which is not available on Taycan, but it is on e-tron GT. You know, just kind of like spice it up a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it'd be cool. I think whatever they can do in terms of saving weight would be incredible.
So Forrest, with your year in review, I wanted to get your, I guess, assessment on, I don't know, just like what Kyle said, what surprised you either good or bad, and what was kind of like the best or worst cars that you had? I know the Ioniq 5 is kind of a surprise, so we can skip that.
Yeah, we talked about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that was like biggest disappointment for me, just because my hopes were so high for that one.
Yeah.
Still sad about it. So best is super hard because I feel like there's different ones in different categories. So I think.
Do you drive the Escalade?
I did drive the new Escalade with like
the night vision stuff and the augmented reality.
Yeah. And then one I had Super Cruise.
Oh yeah.
So that was pretty good. But it didn't stand out to me. I always forget I drove that one. So really? I think if I can still remember it, then in my personal opinion, that's what makes it stand out to me.
I like that you can get a diesel Escalade.
That's the one, I think.
Yeah. Dude. I agree.
Okay. You know, a car always stands out to me for the price and the exotic level. And every single time I get into it, I'm always so excited. Acura NSX. Mm-hmm. I drove it this year, even though
one, right?
It okay. was red. I got the red twice.
Okay.
And dude, I just love that car. And like, it's so underrated. And I think it's one of the better like supercars.
Interesting.
And I'm excited for the Type S. But like, I don't know, dude. I had it for a week and we took it to San Diego and I got like 31 miles per gallon on that thing.
Wow.
And it's then
a very complicated car.
It is.
Yes.
And then you can get like if you're going through like Laguna Beach, right? Let's say you're driving on PCH and you stop and pull off into downtown Laguna Beach, where it's just like little shops. The car just drops into like electric mode. And it's the funniest thing when you drive past people and it's making that little like electric hum. And then people look at the car and they're like, they're so confused. They're like, wait, is that electric? It's yeah, just, I don't know. It's the coolest thing.
Yeah. They're like, I think I saw that car in Iron Man. Yeah.
Right. So yeah. And NSX stood out to me. Another one would be obviously R1T. R1T was everything. R1T was like what I was, R1T was the experience I was hoping to have with Ionic 5. Like you get there and you're like, yep, this is like exactly what I thought it would be. Yeah.
And the people are awesome. And the, like the people who engineered it and the way they present the vehicle and their branding, lifestyle.
Branding. Yeah. Yeah. So I wanted to mention that briefly, tangent. So I went to, with both of you guys to the hub. What did you think of the hub in Venice?
The hub is cool because it's the hub is a cool, like new dealership experience. That's the best way I can explain it. And it's not, you can't buy the car from there, but like, it's cool to go there. And you can like chill out, have a coffee, do some work, whatever. But then you can also like check out this new brand and like poke around the car without anyone saying, all right, well, we're doing a special right now. Do you want to go ahead and like sign some paperwork? We can go over here, talk some numbers.
Yeah. And we got to see we got to see the gear guard in person. Like they had a, well, they locked it. And then like, we got to see the little guy pop up on the, and he's like looking around with the flashlight. Like they have a great,
it's a friendlier version of Sentry Mode.
Yes. Tesla. Yeah. Sentry was like, we're watching you. Like,
cause it's hell, right? Or something like that.
Yeah. And it has this like,
it's like, what is it called? That a Sasquatch?
Yeah. It's like a Sasquatch type. Yeah.
Beast. It's like a cartoon too.
Yeah,
it's
funny.
Friendly. Yeah. Very friendly. Yeah,
it's nice. But then, do you want friendly if someone's trying to break into your car? Or do you want to like the message to come across? Or, like, it'd be funny if he turned. If it was like a cartoon one, and he turned into like this blood dripping from its teeth. Like, yeah, Rivian for sure.
Impressive.
Yeah, Rivian was super impressive. But obviously, holding full judgment for whenever we see like what that real range looks like on the chunky tires.
Yeah.
And like mixed with charging and, you know, just like Kyle just said, we have to incorporate the whole experience of what it's like to like live with it.
Yeah. And it's hard because we don't necessarily know what that will be yet. Like even once we start getting actual media vehicles and we see them in the wild, they're still not ramping up their, I mean, they're working on their charging infrastructure, their own proprietary one, but it's not going to be like fully implemented for years. And they're planning all these charging stops on like trailheads. Like I love the direction they're going. It all sounds great on paper, but we just haven't seen it yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it'd be interesting to cover their implementation of charging too in areas with low power availability from the grid, things like that.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of another standout. Okay. The new Raptor.
Haven't driven it.
Holy smokes, dude. It's not like matte. Like it doesn't feel different from the previous one. Obviously it's like mostly the same, different interior, different exterior, same engine. But dude, that exhaust is everything. If you can get over the fact that it does sound like a
trombone,
like a trombone, like filthy tune, like 370Z, like
no, but it's a good trombone. Like 370Z is really bad trombone. They're in their first year trying to figure out how to play it, and then Raptor's like really good grungy trombone.
Dude, I can't, like, I always reference this moment where I was with Jordan and we're driving under that bridge and I, like, we were going like 70 and for some reason let me downshift all the way down to like third gear when it's got like 10 gears. So it was way up in the RPMs. So I downshifted and it goes room, pop, pop, pop. And I was like, holy smokes. And that was the loudest pop we got out of that thing. And it like echoed everywhere. And then after that, I floored it, shift, and it's like, vroom, vroom. And it's like, dude, it's crazy.
Impression, actually. That, yeah. I bet that's what it sounded like.
What is it? Oh, shit. Okay. get into voice acting for cars.
Yeah.
I know a guy who does that. Haven't driven the new Raptor, but did drive the TRX and enjoyed that, but it's not the truck for me. I'd go Raptor. I drove the last Raptor, obviously, quite a bit and enjoyed that.
Yeah, because I know when I did that comparison video, Jordan was here, and so he can agree. It's like the TRX has a smaller cabin overall. It doesn't feel as like open. It's a little bit tighter. It's pretty tight for a truck, actually. And then the materials in the TRX, though, are like way, way nicer. You get in the Raptor, everything feels a little bit like I will say the Raptor feels like it'd be easier to clean if you had dust in it. The TRX feels like the dust would like cake
everywhere.
In.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny because the Raptor had Alcantara too, but it doesn't seem as like the material doesn't seem as thick.
Yeah, the pile's not as thick.
Yeah, so it doesn't seem like the dirt would like stick in there as much, if that makes any sense. But yeah, dude, the Raptor like off-road felt phenomenal. And I think the Raptor sounded better when you were like hauling it on dirt. Because Jordan heard it from the heard both from the outside, so I didn't know what his thoughts on that were.
Yeah, I enjoyed listening to the TRX a bit more from the outside, but I think the Raptor felt more engaging on the inside. But TRX had did have a great interior. Like, that was surprising for me. Mm-hmm. But I think I would also prefer Raptor. Yeah.
Yeah, the Raptor was mega standout to me, which is funny because that was one of the – that would go down as the most surprising because I didn't think it would be as good considering it feels – specs-wise, it's essentially the same truck with, like, an inch better everything than TRX. So yeah. they barely went up the TRX in terms of, like, off-road specs. Obviously, engine specs are way low, but – and it is nice to see 550 miles on a tank versus 300.
Yeah, but look, efficiency plays a big role into this, right? So, yeah, we're going to need a working vehicle of some kind. I mean, I use my Sprinter now to tow a whole bunch of stuff. It's a diesel Sprinter, but it can only tow 5,000 pounds, and I kind of max that out often. So going to need a heavy hauler, perhaps Rivian. If we can get one this year, would be kind of cool. F-150 Lightning, I don't know. I think I couldn't go for an electric truck. We might need a diesel truck. I really don't know what we're gonna do, but are there any like experiences for us that really stood out to you? Because sometimes automakers will invite us to come see their vehicle, but then they design like this experiential wave around it. Was there any that particularly stood out to you, good or bad?
Yes, I think the worst one I experienced was, let me see. Someone's calling me. Sorry.
No, you're fine.
Someone's calling me. I'm going to decline it for right now. Okay, real quick. The worst I experienced was probably, what was it? I think this was dude, why can't I remember? I mean, I can obviously say the best was Taycan for this year. It was simple, easy, get there, do the drive, and obviously they highlighted the vehicle like
that's perfectly. The Porsche way.
Yeah, so theirs are always really good. But man, I just had the worst one on my like right at the tip of my tongue and I lost it. So I'll have to come back to that.
You told me about, was it Audi? Something, was it something in Austin that you went to, or was that this year or was that last year?
Oh, it was Honda. Okay. So it was the experience with Honda, and I didn't realize there were two experiences going on. So there were two events to drive the Civic hatchback, and one was somewhere else. One was in Austin. The Austin one, which is the one I ended up going to, was mainly focused around ACL. Do you know what that is?
No.
Like Austin City Limits. It's like a big music festival.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So like huge hitters were there. Like it was like Miley Cyrus, like Jack Harlow, Billie Eilish, Doja Cat, like big people were there. And so it was ridiculously busy in Austin, dude. Like it was insane. So we get there and I'm like, okay, we're staying at this hotel, which is packed because it was like 5 miles from the venue. So we're there, and the day we drive the car, it was about 3 hours. And then that was the entire everything surrounding the car. Other than that, it was like, okay, you're going to just go and spend your time at ACL. But I've been on other trips where it's like, if you don't want to do that, there's other options. Like you can go kayaking or you can go like whatever, like ride a horse. And so I thought this was going to be one of those events. And so they bought everyone all these tickets to go to ACL. And I was like, dude, I'm just not a festival person. Like I just can't be around that many people.
Yep.
I just don't like it. And so that was awkward because literally the entire trip was like 90% ACL, 10% Honda Civic. And I was like, oh, shoot. I was telling Jordan, I was like, dude, this is the event. Like, I feel like Kyle would just be fuming with.
Oh, yeah. I just want to go. I tell automakers, I'm like, honestly, if you can just get it to my house before embargo, that's the best thing because I don't really need the fancy hotel or the first class tickets or whatever that is. Just I'm here to review your car. And yeah, dude, when we go, so I did this Volvo thing in Belgium, which
the
C40, which honestly, great car, really enjoyed it.
The I love it. People
were amazing. But because it's an international event, they're like, you have to arrive like at this day. And then I sat in a hotel for like 30 hours. And they're like, well, you got to do all these tests. You got to do all that. But I'm like, I was just in Europe like a few weeks ago. I just showed up and then I did my thing and then I went home. I'm like, can I just fly into Belgium and fly home? Like, I don't even need to stay overnight. And they're like, no, we can't let you drive unless you rest. I'm like, well, I slept on the plane. So whatever. Okay, do the thing. Then I drive the car for literally an hour and a half. And then I have to wait another like 15, 20 hours and in Brussels. And then finally I get to go home. So it was a whole week for an hour and a half of driving.
Jeez.
Yeah. Which I'm not complaining about. Like, I enjoyed Europe, but like they didn't even give us a car. So it was like, good luck on foot. And I'm like, all right, can I get like a car? And like, I was just stuck in like this weird part of Belgium for a week and couldn't go anywhere.
Wow.
Yes. Like, you couldn't have gotten me the car. Like, I was just, this was like a few days after I got back from our month long Euro tour. I'm like, I would have just swung over here, driven the car for an hour and a half and then gone home. But that was a little bit annoying. But like, again, the people were great and we got a lot of good videos out of it. But that's a weird car to spend a week
getting
coverage on. But one of the best trips, I guess, would be, probably another Porsche trip where Calvin, Mark Urbano and I, the photographer, went off-roading in Taycans here in Colorado. Like, we just went to spend a whole day off-roading.
Yep.
That's amazing.
It was great.
Amazing, dude. Well, guys, I have to go swap out a car real quick. So
perfect. I will have to. Mark anyway.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Thanks for joining us. Thanks, Forrest, for joining us with the year-end recap. And happy New Year to everyone.
Yeah, but I think we'll talk to Mike for a little bit
because
we didn't get to his stuff. So we'll see you later, Forrest.
All right. See you, Mike.
Happy
see you,
everyone.
Happy New Year, guys.
Michael Breeling.
Yeah, Mike. Me. What have you experienced this year automotive-wise? I mean, it could be anything. That's very, very vague.
Automotive-wise?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I bought my Mini Electric SE.
Well, you bought an e-tron, right?
I bought an e-tron too, and then I ended up selling it back to Audi for way more than I paid for it.
Mike, I am so jealous because now we're looking at e-trons and they're $65,000 used for a Prestige.
That's what they put mine out there for. So they gave me $60,000 for it, which I paid way less than that with all the discounts and everything that they had on it. And then I think they sold it for like 66 or 67.
Oh my God.
And no sticker was 71 or something like that on the base one. Which so
mine like they could have just bought a new one at sticker, taken the tax credit and would have been ahead of buying.
It would have been ahead. Yeah. Cause I got the tax credit and built into my lease and everything. So Audi made out like Volkswagen made out like a bandit on that one.
Volkswagen credit. Very happy with Mike. He will be approved on any car.
Yeah. And what's funny is now you can't even buy an e-tron. Like you said, you look for them and there's really just no lease deals on them anymore. I mean, there's no lease deals on anything really.
Yeah. Really? Really? If they had like a $599 lease with like $3,000 down or something like that, I'd be like knocking on the Audi dealer right now. And that's not even a great deal compared to what you got. So like just,
I know with the friends and family discount.
Yeah.
It was like $10,000.
I think we will get a friends and family because my sister bought an Audi this year. She bought
the
Q3. The Q3, which I haven't seen. I have seen, but we haven't driven. And it's down in Florida. She bought it here at Ed Carroll Audi in Fort Collins, and then we shipped it to her. We like to support our local dealers when possible. And they gave her such a good deal on that car. Mm-hmm. It was like it was dealer cost during COVID times. They're so good to us. And so I'm sure
that's the type of dealer that you want to find because a lot of dealers are trying to take advantage of a lot of customers right now. And those are the dealers you probably should just avoid if you can.
Yeah. So they're not charging over sticker on any new car.
Yep. That's the way it should be. You should just pay MSRP. There's no reason to pay an ADM market adjustment.
Yeah. I think if we can just all agree to collectively not pay ADM, then maybe it would help. But here's the thing, it's free market. If they can get money for the car, they can charge it. Like, it doesn't bother me that a dealer charges it. I just think it's a good PR move and I would work with the dealer personally. Again, free market. I can buy the car from whoever I want. I'll go buy the car from the dealer, not charging up from MSRP.
Yeah, I agree. It doesn't bother me that they charge, like they, like you said, free market. They can ask whatever they want for a car. It bothers me that people go out there and just pay it.
I know, that's the thing.
There's an EQS now at this car.
There's an EQS in Denver at the Mercedes store with a $50,000.
Oh, I've ADM. Heard about this one. Yeah, and the guy, and apparently that customer went out and bought a Lucid instead.
Yeah, I want to go down there actually and go film that car and see what that's
that would be kind of cool actually.
Yeah, go be like, hey, why is it 50 grand? And like, I'm not mad at the dealer if they can actually make 50 G's on an EQS. Why wouldn't they? They're in
business. I get it.
You gotta feed people, you know. At the end of the day, they're not getting inventory, they got to make money somehow. But G-Wagons with $150,000 markup,
oh man. G-Wagons are worth more now, almost double what they were 2 years ago.
We should have bought so many cars, Mike. We should have bought G3s, Turbo S's, G's, e-trons.
Should have bought Audi RS3s. Now, no, they're expensive again.
Really?
You know, they were getting down to the point like where you could buy one for like upper 40s, low 50s.
Yep.
And now they're all like 60 grand or more.
Damn, it's insane. So,
I mean, you could turn around and flip that car.
And so, yeah, I don't know what's happening with the new car market. I think, look, in the springtime, after we're done making some winter videos with my Winnebago Revel, I'm going to consider selling it because it's just increasing in value sitting there. And there's no, like, I'd be dumb not to sell it if it's gone up $30,000 more than I paid for it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I get, like, why you want it and want to keep it because, I mean, you use it. And, I mean, it's a great car to have because it just allows you to live wherever you want.
Yep. At the end of the day, that will, you know, like we have some big purchases coming up. I have my Taycan, we have e-tron or something for Alyssa. Like it's going to get expensive real quick here. That would free up a ton of money and would have made money on it. Definitely a safe purchase with that vehicle. And thanks to General RV for getting me a, what was it, $40,000 discount or something like that?
Yeah. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, there could be an electric version of that van lifestyle hopefully in the future at some point.
I'd do it, but
I was going to say with the you need like a generator on board for the electric battery would be cool.
So what are the best cars and worst cars you've driven, because you're around a ton of cars and you buy a ton of cars for your employer, but what's good, what's bad that you were in?
So good car. I mean, obviously, the Taycan is probably the best car that I've driven this year. Ben's Taycan. Goes.
You drove a turbo, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, the Taycan in general is the best car. But we did drive, we had like a day with a Taycan turbo. And that car would be the one to buy if it wasn't $180,000. <Right. laughs> And it was not, like, neither of us have driven the Cross Turismo at all. I've not even seen one in person. Nope. I've only ever driven the regular Taycan, the sedan.
You should come out and drive Logan's. We have to have Logan back on the podcast because we had him on earlier, one of the previous episodes where he talked us through his build, and now he just received delivery and wrapped it that really cool purple color. And
yep.
He wrapped the cladding. And
let's do a video with him.
Yeah. Yeah, we should.
Is he Logan?
Yeah, you should do a video. Oh, yeah. Right.
Yeah,
his Taycan looks great because he did wrap the cladding. So it looks really interesting. And it looks way better.
Four, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
Big wheels? I think you got
big
wheels. Good wheels. Yes. Good wheels.
That's important. You can make or break a Taycan with wheels.
Yeah.
As I think Ben is slowly learning.
Yeah. Well, he spent all last night looking at wheels. He's like, I think I'm going to buy wheels for the Taycan. I'm like, it's a lease. Just forget about it. Whatever. But
yeah, he already wrapped them.
Yeah. Now he's not sure about that. I don't know.
I'm not sure about it, to be honest.
As far as like bad cars, I would say I didn't drive too many cars this year, that were new, you know, I mean, most of the cars I'm in are a couple years old at this point. So it's difficult to judge that like worst car for me.
Okay.
I mean, that's still consumer advice because there's a lot of people in the used car market. And I get so many questions of people who are like, what should I buy? Here's my budget. I'm not buying new. And it's like, wow, that opens a whole can of worms because you have every year's models prior. And
there's room and opportunity for someone to open up a review outlet just for used cars.
Oh, yeah.
Well, the thing is with used cars, right? So, I mean, I've with my employer, I've been in the business for a while now. And now it's just seeing how expensive used cars have gotten. Like cars that a year ago or a year and a half ago were selling for 14 grand are now $22,000. Like that's just what they're worth. And you get in the car and I don't think it's a $22,000 driving experience. You know, it feels like an old car, like a $14,000 car.
Yeah. I bought my car for 14 and now I've tripled the miles and added 3 years and your employer offered 15.
Yeah. I'm not surprised.
What can I trade in my Revel?
We actually could probably appraise it.
But don't you not take things with the toilet?
That's what I thought. I think we have to get special approval, and we probably could, but.
Okay.
But anyway.
I'd be curious what they would put on my
it'd Winnipeg. It'd be a longer process.
It wouldn't be an instant
situation. No. For sure not. Looking forward though to next year, like cars that are coming out in the future. I know we didn't really touch on like anything you're looking forward to seeing. I'm always looking forward for the Rivian. I really want to get some seat time in one of those. But the Fisker Ocean is actually on my radar.
What? Are you kidding?
I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued by that.
What about the Fisker Ocean intrigues you, Michael Breeling?
The California mode is cool. It's going to have allegedly that solar sunroof that can charge the car up to 1500 miles in a year, apparently in proper conditions. And it has something called hyper immersive surround sound, which is supposed to be amazing according to Fisker. So
that's the thing. It's all according to Fisker. What and why?
Yeah, the big 17 inch screen that rotates. Like we'll see.
Okay. I'm really happy.
I'm intrigued about that car.
I mean, if they can come in at the price point of $38,000, like the lease of $399 a month, like that's pretty incredible. I don't know what the range is going to be.
Probably the range is going to be bad. I thought
the 300-ish miles or something.
The range numbers were great. They just couldn't tell us anything to support where they pulled those numbers out of a hat. So
yeah. Well, I know you guys have like a little bit.
So do 300 miles? How? We don't know.
But that intrigues me to see how good the car could be on paper, at least. So. I want to see, I hope that it's a good car. I mean, that's probably, my boss was just talking to me about it the other day and I forgot about the Fisker Ocean, to be honest. So reminded me of it.
What about, okay, if you're going Fisker Ocean, what's that Vietnamese company?
VinFast.
VinFast. What do you think about them?
VinFast. So are they going to actually sell cars in America?
Yes, that's my understanding. And the guy who runs their sales is like, I guess, a viewer of our channel. And he was asking me like what they should do for incentives for pre-orders. And I said, you just should not have pre-orders. But
yeah, I mean, just get up to a point where you can produce the car and then take orders.
Right.
Like, don't.
They probably will. He was curious what the incentives were. Like, what did Lucid offer pre-order holders? The answer is nothing. And what did Volkswagen offer? Nothing. They all get free charging when you buy one.
Yeah.
Occasionally, manufacturers will send out like little gifts. Like if you order like right away, you'll get like a water bottle and a t-shirt in the mail. Rivian, so thank you.
Rivian did that.
Rivian does that still to this day.
I think that's the move.
Yeah, I would say something like that. I mean, try and partner with EA, I guess, and offer free charging.
Yeah,
that seems to be a big selling point.
BMW is the only one who's not, right?
I don't know. Yeah, BMW I don't think has any partnership with EA at all for anything. And speaking of BMW, I mean, the i4 is actually a pretty intriguing car too. I just built one the other day, like loaded out, and I thought it was a pretty reasonable price for the performance.
I agree. i4 is going to be a really interesting car. And even iX, because that's going to be a big SUV. iX is actually, so we just finished recording our Inside EVs podcast this morning. And I didn't realize iX is coming next month. It's coming in January.
Yeah, it's like right around the corner. I forgot about it until like a week ago when I just happened to stumble across it on the BMW website.
And that's a big SUV that we need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I know.
Availability.
I know the iX styling is controversial, to say the least. But the interior, where you're going to spend all the time in the car, looks great, I think.
I love the back. I'm pretty excited. When you look at that iX from the rear with those clear taillights, it looks so good.
Yes.
I mean, the it's front, a Model X competitor. Yeah. I would have it over a Model X just based
I think I would too, just based off of you know, the photos and initial.
Well, I've got to sit in it and I've played around with it and know some of the engineers on it. And I know they did a really good job is my initial
understanding. Yeah, they took it really seriously. I mean, it's good to see BMW finally jumping into the full electrification. They could have done it, as we mentioned, years ago when the i3 came out and been way ahead of everybody, but they did not. So, but yeah, the i4, the iX, those two are certainly cars that I'm looking forward to next year or next month, I guess, in the case of the iX.
Yep. Definitely agree. Jordan, what about for you?
Like what I'm looking forward to?
No. What was your best and worst cars?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I kind of tangented with you earlier. It was really the Supra was a highlight, both of them for their own reasons.
And we had them at the same time, which was really cool.
That was great.
That was cool.
I'd love to.
And we had the 4 Series, the 430i at the same time as well.
Yeah.
And it was all BMWs, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, that was an impressive car. That was one of those cars where they unveiled it, and I was like, that's ugly. Not that excited about it. And now it's grown on me so much. And then the C8 has done the opposite, where I'm like already really bored of seeing C8 Corvettes.
C8 didn't impress me at all.
Yeah.
There's so many people in the market trying to flip C8s.
Oh, my gosh. It's
just so silly at this point. And the market is coming down. I mean, I've seen people asking like less and less for them now. So I think that whole train has left the station. But, yeah, I'm tired of seeing C8s everywhere.
Yeah, so I'm still very excited when I see a Supra, even though they're becoming more commonplace, which is great. I mean, they should. It's a good car.
Great daily driver. Hatchback. Yeah. You just can't put the windows down.
Yeah.
I heard the buffeting's terrible.
There's an easy fix for it, but, yeah.
Yeah, why didn't Toyota just make the fix? I don't know.
Especially with the – now they're in their third model year and still haven't fixed it. With a piece of plastic that everyone can buy now. So I don't know, but that was great. Rivian was great. One of the more surprising ones was maybe that Genesis G80. That for the price, that was like, this is a nice car.
Car had some presence.
Yeah.
You roll up in that thing and you're like, whoa. Genesis styling, by the way, I think is the most like Russian dictator styling you can have.
Nowadays,
yeah,
because all Mercedes and all Audis look the same now.
Yeah,
they all BMWs up. Really.
We were behind a brand new A8 in the drive-thru, and I'm like, it doesn't even look special.
Yeah,
I saw a new pre-facelift manufactured test mule S8 the other day in LA, and was like, oh, that doesn't even like. I only knew it was an S8 because it had 4 exhaust pipes, and then I was like, I don't think I've seen that strip in the rear bumper before.
Yeah.
But it looked the same as every other one. And it was trash too. It was totally dirty. It was great. They were really testing it.
Yeah. Genesis, G80 and GV80 and GV70. Like you see those on the road and you're like, yeah, that's.
So is GV90 a thing or is 80 the biggest one?
I think
80 is the biggest one for now. There might be a 3-row SUV one or a bigger one in the future.
They really need a bigger one.
On it, yeah.
Yeah. But the GV80, the one Tiger Woods crashed, because that's how you have to refer to that car forever.
I was going to say, Genesis should make a Tiger Woods edition.
Yeah, and it has like seriously side curtain airbags.
Yeah, I mean it's a safe car, so
yeah. But
I saw a GV70 last week in like that matte gray color that they came in with the big 20-inch sport wheels. That thing looks so freaking good. Yeah, with all like the dimples in them, like it looked
that
so
has to
good.
Be the best looking SUV on the market. There's one in the media fleet that we should request because
For the size,
baller.
Yeah.
So a lot of cars have great interior or great exterior, and Genesis is currently nailing both.
Yep, so, they're top of their game right now, if you ask me.
Yeah,
I don't know about the GV60.
Yeah,
is that with the electric one? I saw it in person and it was imposing, but it's not nearly as good as the other stuff. What they need is a big ass chrome grill on the front.
Yeah,
that's what the GV90 is just going to be all grill,
just all grill, baby.
Yeah, I'd love to see Genesis take on the Telluride / Palisade. That's what all they need to finish their lineup for now. And maybe bring back like a Genesis, you know, coupe.
I don't think they'll bring that back.
Probably not.
Did you see that Genesis coupe that got slammed under that truck? Did you hear about this?
No.
There was a massive accident where a truck like dragged a Genesis coupe and like ran it over and just demolished the car. And the guy was totally fine.
Jeez.
It's crazy when you see things like that, like how safe cars are and just how lucky people are.
Yeah, really insane. Yeah. I have to say, especially towards the end of this year and going into next year, safety is a much larger thing on my mind. And maybe it's because I'm getting older, but like, I don't want to say I'm paranoid, but every time I drive a car, the majority of the time I'm thinking about safety. And I don't know if that's a good or bad thing to think about. But I really think it's important to be in a safe car, which is also why I would like to buy a Morgan three-wheeler this year and have something
so safe.
Yeah. But like, you're almost so scared. You're hyper aware in that car.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's other people generally. Like, I know I've driven with all you guys and we're all safe drivers, and, but agree with the safety thing. Like, I bought my V90 because I wanted to feel safe, and I just thought it was the coolest looking car available, and it still is one of the coolest cars on sale. But I felt really safe in that car, for sure. Even my Mini, I still feel safe in my Mini.
Yep, totally agree. Minis are strong. And so safety, even just for the dogs, like, I got Alyssa for Christmas this like custom made dog crate that's roll rated and crash rated. And I mean, it's like the most expensive dog crate you could ever imagine. But like, we have them just like in the back seat. And like, this is ludicrous. Imagine if we have an accident and they just like fly out, like, and they could kill us. We could hurt them.
Yeah.
Safety is a big thing. Just for some reason, I don't know why I'm bringing it up, but it's been on my mind a lot.
That extends to like charging station safety. Like, we've talked about that before. Just
That's what Electrify America was upset with me on the phone about. They said, why are you saying our stations are unsafe? I said, I actually didn't say your stations were unsafe. I said superchargers, I thought, were. Mm-hmm. But here's the problem with charging station safety. You're attached to a unit, regardless of charging network. I am not singling out any network. This is any charging station. There's no eject button in the car and go.
Yeah.
And so someone rolls up on you, gun in the window, right? Says, give me all your money. It happened a lot at Burlington Supercharger. Remember, there was like one guy who just robbed his owners over and over. And there's nothing you can do. You can't go anywhere. So you're like, sorry, can you hold on 1 second? Let me just unplug. And then, but you can't. So, you either need to fire back, I guess, or give up everything you have.
Yep.
And so you're screwed. And that's a real problem. They're also in usually the back of parking lots to avoid being iced, but that's also away from the majority of people. Lighting only goes so far. And I'm increasingly more paranoid about that.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm just going crazy.
I mean, I will say props to Electrify America for adding canopies or starting to add canopies.
Yes, I think they're doing everything they reasonably can do. Yeah. I mean, look, I don't know why I pissed them off so much. I feel bad because it wasn't intentional. The intention is to have a better charging experience for everyone. And the canopies are awesome. The lighting's awesome. I think they're really focused on this. Mm-hmm. But then even things like, how do you get cars plugged in with for people with disabilities and having wheelchair access? And some stations require specific handicap charging spots. For example, California does. You roll up to EA stations in California, they have separate handicap charging. I think that's setting the benchmark for how these stations need to be set up. I think they're doing a really good job.
Yeah.
But then even then the cables are heavy and things like this. So, and then if like the station doesn't work, you need to like load back up and move the car. And so, there's more like top priority is putting stations in the ground that work, putting them places so you can actually get from A to B, but then all of these other things need to take priority.
Yeah.
Sort of, I guess, secondary priority, I would say.
Yeah.
First priority is, can it charge? Yes.
Does it work?
Yeah.
Just don't forget about the other important things.
Yeah.
There's a lot they're trying to figure out at once.
It's so much. And they've done a lot in a short period of time. Both the Supercharger Network, EVgo, ChargePoint, EA, Greenlots, you name it. Everyone's pushing hard. But it's early days and things aren't good yet. It really is a bad experience, I would say, overall charging for the majority of people.
Yep. I would agree.
Yeah. Well, let's wrap it up there. And thanks everyone for joining this fun New Year's Eve, end of year special. And we look forward to next year. All the cars, we'll talk about that early in the next year of what we're looking forward to. And
Everyone stay safe on the holidays, and we'll see you next year.
Happy New Year.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.